Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the Bradley Wiggins Show by Eurosport, the home of cycling in association with Lacquer Bicycle Insurance. I'm Graham Wilgos. Brad, we're back in the pub after quite the day's racing.
Yeah, it's thick as fast, isn't it? What is it, 2 weeks since the Tour de France? We've had a world title, we've had Flèche Wallonne, Liège, Bastogne, Liège, Bring Back Tour, Giro. It's we're spoilt. And to be fair, I actually think the best racing this weekend was probably Liège, Bastogne, Liège.
What race? I mean, that's certainly the headline today. So the men's and women's race for Ladoyen.
Men's and women's. And Mathieu van der Poel's exploits on Saturday in the Brink Brink Tour.
Absolutely outstanding. That last 50 kilometres to solo to the stage win and the GC too. Let's start with... So we've got stage two of the Giro, which we will come to. But let's start with the real headline today, which was a spectacular end to a sensational day's racing at Liège-Bastogne-Liège. The final 15 kilometres was good. The final 15 metres, arguably better. The final 15 centimetres were incredible.
Yeah. You know, we don't want to be too harsh, I don't want to get too personal, but Alaphilippe, he probably displayed a bit too much arrogance there today in terms of, we all tipped him to win. He's the world champion. I think he's riding high and maybe got a bit too cocky with it and underestimated and his opponents, which were, you know, let's face it, the guy who's finished second in the Tour de France in Primoz Roglic, Hirschi, and he tried to bully the likes of Hirschi in that a little bit by sort of using his body weight and flicking across the road a bit. He dives, if you're on the overhead shots, he dives over the Bahrain rider and nearly knocks him off, dives to the right of the barriers, so he only has to look over his left shoulder because he's next to the barriers and, you know, they can only come one way. As he spots the jump of Hirschi, he turns left. And we've seen what that caused. And then starts sprinting for the line in the middle of the road and then, you know, chucks his arms. Yeah, I mean, it's just a display of over-the-top arrogance. I've won the world title. Everyone said I'm going to win. I'm back on form. And I'm going to just, you know, I'm going to underestimate these guys. And he did. And he lost. And probably, you know, I'd say rightly so, but I'm glad Roglic came under him and did that. So, yeah, because it's... you know, it's a bit sort of rubbishing your opponents a bit. And as I say, I'm not being, you know, self-righteous or anything because I spoke only the other week that I did that in my head with the likes of Cadel and that. But to display it on the bike like that is, you know, just, you know, I think Roglic went up in my estimations at the Tour in his sportsmanship and the way he handled that defeat. And then even today in that interview, he just made a little joke by saying, I finally won a race.
Finally, I've
and
won
I just
something,
thought that
huh?
was, you know... For someone who's very robotic, who's someone we didn't see much emotion or laughter through the Tour de France, just to say that, it humanised him a bit the last couple of weeks. And that we got that because Alaphilippe, aside from getting disqualified anyway, just sort of diminished his opponents a little bit and sort of rose. And I think when you're that good and a world champion, you know, I think, you know, you need to sort of show a bit more class than that.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, look, he's a lovely lad and we're all, you know, I'm sure there's times where I, you know, was like that as well. So, you know, this isn't me saying that I certainly wasn't, but as an observer now, it's you just a bit like Cipollini. I remember many years ago and I regret whether he threw a bottle at a commissar that was trying to help the race. And that jersey is very special and you want it to see it displayed properly and with the utmost respect to your opponents, because without those opponents, you wouldn't win a bike race.
Well, look, Brad, you've done it justice for us there. Here's how Carlton Kirby called it for us on Eurosport.
Alaphilippe comes out of his wake and goes for it right now and almost slams the door shut on the Bahrain rider. And it's Hershey. Oh, and he gets nudged, Hershey. Oh, and he's got a chain disregarded here. And Alaphilippe, is he going to take it? Oh, and I think he may have just lost it on the line. Too busy celebrating. And I think Roglic has stolen this at the very last. We shall wait and see. That's going to be a photo. Oh, what drama. Nudge into, as Van der Poel brings this home, nudge between Alaphilippe and Hershey. Maybe that distracted him ever so slightly. He thought he'd still got it, and the cameras are lingering to decide who has taken this. He still doesn't know. Let's have a look overhead. What a cat amongst the pigeons it turned out to be here, Dan.
It did. Matej Mohoric is doing the only thing he could do, having had a big chase to get onto this group. He went straight past them, not enough punch to get any gap, and Alaphilippe was very clever in looking around and making sure he got onto that wheel straight away, because it allowed him to have a little bit of a lead out. Mark Hershey, though, right onto the wheel of Alaphilippe. I'm not exactly sure. Oh, he just, where Alaphilippe swerved, he just pulled his foot out of the pedal. I think at that point, Alaphilippe thought he had it won, but Roglic coming up on the
lead. Here we go, he's got it.
I think he's got it.
He's got it, and Alaphilippe's arms are now by his side, and he is beside himself.
Oh. So Brad, as you were saying that, so you were saying you were pleased that Roglic pinched it on the line. I was pleased too, because, okay, Alaphilippe, we know, has been relegated to fifth place because he swerved in front of Hershey afterwards.
But he nearly knocked him off, didn't he?
Nearly knocked him off. Hershey unclipped. So for me, it was Hershey was looking like he was going to take the win there.
He probably would have done, yeah.
But at least Roglic has taken the win outright. So Alaphilippe hasn't stolen someone else's moment on the line.
No. And I think it slightly embarrassing for Alaphilippe as well, you know, just in displaying that arrogance. It's a bit that classic, you know, turtle in the hair thing, isn't it?
Yeah, but he was swerving all over the place in the final kilometer, and when they were playing the four of them were playing a bit of cat and mouse,
sort of being a bit sort of willy waving a little bit, you know. And I just think he's back on top. He's back on, you know, he rides on that kind of. He is the world champion. Everyone's tipped him, but you know. What goes around comes around, and let's not forget, a couple of weeks ago, you know, I like the way he sort of said as well, you know, I don't want to sound like I'm hammering him, but, you know, he did say, like, I just used the last 10 days of the tour as training. It's like, well, you know, you tried to win those stages when you're in them breaks, and you didn't have the legs.
Mm.
Yeah, you were training, but again, I was diminishing the Tour de France. I was just training, and those guys, you know, won the stages, and I was just training. It's like, it's because he probably... rightly or wrongly, came under maybe a little bit of criticism that he wasn't where he was at last year. He's also been through a lot in his life, so I couldn't understand that as well. I did say somewhere during the podcast or something that there was a bit of aggression in his riding and stuff, and the way he was, like, he had a point to it. It's, you know, he may still be grieving and stuff from his father, and, you know, his father, let's not forget, probably, you know, has not got to see him become world champion. He's displaying a sort of a little bit of anger in his riding style and aggression, and it's kind of disrespect to his opponents as well, a little bit. I mean, put it this way, had Roglic not come underneath and he hadn't been disqualified and won and it was controversial, but he'd brought down Hershey, I mean, that would have looked terrible, wouldn't it? Because he's winning fans by the day, Hershey, just in the way he's doing his interviews and things like that. And I just think, you know, Julian just needs to be a little bit careful, really, because, as I say, we're all capable, and he's a lovely lad. He doesn't need to be like that. Let's not forget how he won the hearts of the public last year.
Mm.
And it's just wavering off that a little bit.
Well, he did Roglic the most almighty favour today, because I've no doubt that Hershey and Pogacar would have finished ahead of Roglic.
Had he stayed right.
Had Alaphilippe not diverted from his sprint
line. I think Hershey would have come over and won, and Roglic wouldn't have come through. But again... one rider's misfortune opened the door for... And to be fair, you know, actually it was quite nice for Roglic to come and do, you know, give him that liaise after the other week. And the way he handled it, I think everyone was pleased to see him win today.
For sure. A little boost after being hammered at the Worlds
as
well.
And he was super happy again.
And
he's always super happy.
Well, it's a European thing, isn't it?
Super happy.
To say super before everything. Happy.
But no, he was good. He's got the biggest face mask in a peloton. He looked like he's got a budgie in it. It's like a cricket box.
Matej Mohoric on the Slovenians finished 2 seconds down in fourth.
Yeah.
And honourable mention as well to Matthew van der Poel, who after, as you said earlier, an awesome day at the Bink Bang Tour yesterday, led the rest of the field in sixth place.
Almost makes you wonder what might have been.
What if he hadn't have put that effort in yesterday? Yeah. What he could have done today?
Yeah. But hey, yeah. Listen, win's a win, isn't it?
And that's Matthew van der Poel day, really. Alaphilippe did awesomely well, to give him some credit, to chase back on in the first place. He changed bikes twice.
Yeah.
He had a problem with his cleat, which he needed some attention from the team car for. So he went down as well, I think, in the same crash that Adam Yates went down in. So Adam Yates was an early casualty today.
He did do well, but he's a class act. And you can imagine adrenaline was flowing in the final, and if he won that after the day, Dad, he's confident in himself and sure of himself, but he doesn't need to ride like that to win, really. And he's paid the price today heavily.
Yeah.
It's a lesson to young kids as well, you know, like, don't take your hands off the bar till you get to the line, really. And he will probably have felt quite stupid, really, but...
That will bring him back down to earth, won't it?
I mean, my son texted me straight away and said, Alaphilippe, what a tart. I said, why? He said, he got rolled in Lyon. He started celebrating 10 minutes to go. What a muppet. So it just shows you, like, it doesn't endear yourself to people, you know?
Yeah. 15Ks out, he went in the same way that we saw him go in the Worlds, but this time there was no way that Mark Hirschi was going to let him go. So that group of Kwiatkowski, Pogacar, Hirschi and Roglic all sort of tagged onto him. There was no way they were going to give him the same space that they gave him at the Worlds.
Yeah, I mean, I actually think it's been a breath of fresh air, the likes of Hirschi and that coming through. They're just new names to contend with. In a strange
all, year. All won a stage at the Tour, by the way.
Well, we were probably used to seeing the likes of Valverde, you know, Gilbert and all the likes in the Lièges and that. And we're getting to see people that gave us so much pleasure in July. Oh, sorry, in July, whatever it was.
In September.
The new July.
New July.
And still competing well. World Championships last week. You just won Flesh Wallonne. I mean, what season he's had. What boy, you know?
And more to come from him as well, you feel?
Definitely, yeah.
Brad, the women's race then, won by Lizzie Degnan. Trek Segafredo soloed to a magnificent win. She was part of a 9-rider front group that went clear with more than 50 kilometres to go. Degnan then went clear on her own over La Redoux, 30 kilometres from the finish, opening a gap of almost a minute on the rest of the field.
Hey, yeah. What did we talk about yesterday, where I sort of thought that the British team may have let her down?
Well, so she said afterwards...
How great the team were.
She was racing on instinct, but that she was allowed to race on instinct. And so you were saying yesterday, you didn't feel like GB gave her the same support or necessarily trust as well.
Not necessarily support. You can imagine how them girls look up to Lizzie. It must be quite a daunting experience, you know, to try and replicate what those girls do for her at her trade team. So it's not that they let her down. I think, let's not forget, could we say she's going to go down as our best ever road rider? She's probably surpassed Nicole Cook now.
The way she's going, yeah. I mean, for sure.
Those girls, you know, imagine riding the Worlds with years to come, can always say that they rode the Worlds with Lizzie Degnan. So, and let's not forget, that team is the best team in cycling, isn't it?
She said afterwards, I think the nicest thing about this team is that we are allowed to race on instinct and not to fear failure.
Yeah.
Which I think speaks volumes.
Yeah, and you saw the relationship she has with...
Eliza Longa Borghini.
Yeah, I mean, they've got a great relationship. She's almost said it's almost telepathic, isn't it? They're bouncing off each other at the moment. And Lizzie's just like... She just gets off the bike. I mean, I remember when she's like getting medals at the Worlds and that, and then obviously she got the medal at the Olympics. She was always like... laughing and giggling and couldn't believe that she'd achieved. Now she almost gets off and it's just the elation looks different in her face because, as I said before, whether she wins or loses, nothing will ever beat the fact that she goes home to a daughter, you know, and I almost think that's given her another gear, you know, her life's in perspective and she doesn't think about it too much. And she just like the way she attacked today, you don't overthink things and, she's got nothing to lose. And in doing that, she's getting stronger all the time.
I think nothing to lose is the thing here. So she said that she knew she needed to be over La Redoux before Anna van der Breggen and Annemiek van Vleuten.
Yeah.
Obviously two of, I mean...
Which isn't an easy task.
Van der Breggen, as we said yesterday, she's three from three, looking to make it four from four. And van Vleuten, on her day, absolutely unstoppable.
It's amazing. I mean, it's she's an inspiration to every young girl. Not only in the UK, but around the world. She's world class. She's a mother. And she's an example of how far women's cycling has come and what's capable. You know, you can go away and have a family and come back to sport and still earn good money. And she's doing the sport wonders at the moment. And so, I think it's a shame she's not getting more press attention in the UK from the national papers and things, really, because, you know, is it too early to say? Well, maybe it is. Maybe we're biased, but sports person of the year.
Wouldn't that be great to see, though? And you heard it here first on the Bradley Wiggins show. Lizzie Degnan for sports personality of the year.
We've got to start thinking about that now. You know, we talk about Ronnie O'Sullivan, as great as Ronnie is. Ronnie probably don't want to win the sports person of the year. Let's give it to Lizzie. You know, come on the BBC.
Campaign starts here. We'll be back with more from the Bradley Wiggins show right after this.
Lacquer's collective cover is made especially for cyclists, for life on and off your bike. Lacquer has flipped outdated traditional insurance on its head with no more fixed upfront premiums. Instead, your monthly contributions are based on the collective's claims that month. Your max monthly price is capped, but the savings are all yours. Plus, 80% of your money goes straight back into the collective, fixing, replacing, and helping. And the other 20% keeps their wheels spinning. It's as simple as that. And when things go bad, Lacquer's got your back. Claims are handled by experts and usually agreed within a day, with no depreciation or excess. They've ditched annual contracts locking you in. With Lacquer, if you want to leave, you can, anytime. Head over to www.lacquer.co, where new customers can get £10 credit by signing up today with the discount code Wiggins.
Welcome back to the Bradley Wiggins Show, sponsored by Lacquer Bicycle Insurance. Brad, the Giro d'Italia Stage 2 today, Al Calmo to Agrigento, 150 kilometres, the first road stage proper, a flat stage with quite the climb to finish. Here's how Rob Hatch called it for us on Eurosport.
Sagan gets closer and closer, and after almost 3.5 hours of racing, it's going to come down to a great opportunity. Honoré on the left-hand side, trying to spring a surprise for Denmark and for Koenig Quickstep. There is Ulisi on the left as we look at it now in the white. Sagan waits and continues to wait, and now Sagan's going to have to launch. It's Ulisi on that lip, Ulisi going to the line, and despite Sagan being there, it's Ulisi for number 7. Diego Ulisi takes stage 2 of the Giro d'Italia 2020. His team rode for him all afternoon long, and he has finished it off wonderfully. Diego Ulisi wins. Sagan looked like he was going to get himself in the right position, but in the end, Brian, just as at the Tour de France, he didn't have that final kick.
Brad, Diego Ulisi taking his 7th stage win of the Giro d'Italia, or at the Giro d'Italia, I should say. Peter Sagan, 2nd, did all he could to bridge across to that front group. Didn't quite have the legs in the end.
No, but do you know what? It was good to see him back. It's like, it's a peak that we've been used to in the past, isn't it?
Well, he looked like he was in a good position coming in right at the end.
He must have been, because he got 2nd.
Ulisi was looked after very, very well by UAE and won at a canter.
Yeah, I mean, yesterday I wouldn't have put Sagan up there on that climb, but he's having a go.
Looking for his first win in 15 months.
Yeah. And he looks like he's hungry for it again, Pete. So it's great. I think there's a lot more to be expected in this race. Michael Matthews, 4th.
Yeah, Matthews leading in the second group. Mikel Honoré, the Dane of the day.
Yeah.
Kernan Quickstep coming in to round out the podium. Filippo Ganna as well. We should mention him holding on to the pink jersey. But another good day, really, for your man G, or for our man G.
Brilliant. He's we haven't got long to wait, really, because obviously tomorrow's Mount Etna. He's looking better than I've ever seen him, and the way he's talking in interviews, and even on Instagram today, celebrating his 5th wedding anniversary.
Yeah, I saw that.
Just, you know, tomorrow's going to be a good day. Astana lost another rider today, so. Fuglsang has lost another rider.
Fuglsang, yeah.
They've obviously lost Lopez. He's now down to 5 teammates.
Alexander Vlasov abandoned with stomach trouble. So having lost Miguel Angel Lopez yesterday in the time trial. So it's a disastrous start for Astana. Nasty crash, as we know, for Lopez yesterday. The good news for him is that he walked out of hospital after an x-ray. So this is from the team doctor. An x-ray said he suffered a deep, very close wound to the iliac artery, which is the main artery in the abdominal area.
Yeah.
He had surgery to repair that, but was able to leave hospital on foot and return to the team's hotel yesterday evening.
Yeah, good on him. You know, I think we all hoped that he was going to be all right. And I mean, it was a horrendous crash, you know.
Viviani went down as well in the intermediate sprint, which was won by Fernando Gaviria.
Yeah.
So we saw Viviani go down. He was using the Tour de France to ride himself into form.
Yeah.
He would have hoped for more, but Cofidis haven't had a particularly good day. A couple of men went down for them too.
They haven't had a good 12 years, have they, really? I mean, they've, they, you know, I used to ride for them, and you know, they were the biggest team in the world one time when they're you know, all the hitters, but they just don't seem ever to get it right, Cofidis, and I think it's a shame because they probably deserve it, and they've invested a lot of money in the likes of Viviani and that over the years. So it'd be nice to see Viviani get a stage win here. I like him. He's a nice bloke. He's diamond. He's a top fella.
So Brad, as you mentioned, Mount Etna to finish tomorrow.
Yeah,
it's the one exception in terms of having a mountaintop finish. Compared to the Tour de France, which was here, there, and everywhere in terms of flat stage, we're in the mountains.
There's a lot more
Jura, Pyrenees, Maritime Alps, back to the Alps.
That's the Giro through and through, though. It's
a far more formulaic race overall.
Yeah, just nature of the terrain, I guess. You know, if you want to visit most parts of Italy, they like to chuck a mountain in on day three. You know, and it's good. I think it gives us something to think about.
Well, it gives G something to think about tomorrow. So, what are we expecting? Tomorrow, are we expecting
Ineos will have a dry run up the climb and doing the train. I think they'll take responsibility. G will sit on the back door. I don't think he'll do any attacking. He doesn't need to at this stage. And he'll ride to lose zero time. I don't think Simon Yates will try anything. Doesn't need to.
Doesn't need to this early. He's only 49 seconds
Nibali
down.
He could. But I think there's a lot of guys still fresh. So we'll see guys that will be up there. Ulissi, those sort of guys. I don't think we'll see a GC showdown tomorrow because it's not that hard a climb. The gradients aren't that hard, but the last when they went up a couple of years ago, they did some damage. Simon Yates and Chavez went up front, didn't they?
So we won't see another summit until stage 15, and then the back end of the race is absolutely loaded. 5,000 metres of climbing in the last four mountain stages alone.
Yeah.
And then we got the final day time trial.
Yeah, but it's always like that, Giro, isn't it? Every year, and sometimes it lives up to the hype, sometimes it doesn't, because everyone's just knackered when they get there.
So as a rider, is it easier to be able to get into a rhythm when you know you've got pretty much flat stages or intermediate stages coming up until stage 15, and then the back end of the race you know is going to be hard? Was the tour particularly difficult this year by comparison?
Sometimes it's easier when there's stages like tomorrow because there's more, you're guaranteed a GC shuffle, and the race starts establishing itself. So then you get the pecking order. You know where your rivals are at. You get to ride in that hierarchical structure in the peloton. Whereas if you're waiting for a week for that first sort of, you know, other teams get to ride at the front because they've got the jersey and it becomes a sprinter's race. Once you establish that pecking order on like day three, you know, the race kind of looks after itself. So you get to ride as the GC is laid out rather than a sprinter's got the jersey. So you've then got Ineos, Jumbo and all that sort of competing to ride behind them. And it sets. And then obviously some guys will be at further distance on GC. So that whole pattern of breaks going, you know, like in the third week of the tour when the people are enough down on GC to go away, that happens already early on. So it actually starts to settle the race out now. So there's less nervousness because, say, G takes the jersey tomorrow and wins by a minute. Everyone knows he's the strongest. So the race forms a pattern straight away. Whereas if we're waiting up for a week like we did at the tour for, like, Roglic to take the jersey, there's more nervousness in the peloton. So the Giro's historically like that.
Ineos, do we think they want to take the jersey for G tomorrow? Because they're quite happy having Ganna in pink at the moment because they're not expected to defend it for him, right?
No, but they have to take the responsibility to ride the race at the front.
Right.
Which suits G because of the nervousness and that. Plus, Ganna's Italian. He deserves that right to defend it.
Yeah.
It puts them... They've not had much time to practice that this year because they've not really led much, have they? So it's like business as usual now, getting on that front, getting Salvio and Puccio and all those to ride. It gets Teo in the rhythm of riding the GC for G. He can ride at the front. You know, Teo's not sort of down the back trying to move up on stages and risk crashing and stuff. Do you see what I mean? So the guys can ride on the front now, Teo, and he almost gets a clean ride now for the next... In some ways, it suits G to take the jersey tomorrow because we're going to take it at some point, hopefully. If someone else takes it, G, great at riding at the front with the likes of Ganna and that.
Castroviejo,
Teo and that, all sort of scuttling, trying to move up all the time. And that's when they tend to have accidents and things. They get a free ride at the front. You know what I mean? So it actually suits them.
Business as usual. So 17, 18 and 20 all contain 5,000 metres of climbing. So I got excited.
And that was the biggest
shake-ups,
wasn't it?
Well,
Nibs came from 3 minutes behind in 16 to win the race.
Yeah,
Krojcevic crashed. Froome won on the last day, came back. Took a packet, didn't he?
And we've seen, so the end of the race, we see the biggest shake-up.
Yeah.
So I want to say anything can happen at the back end of the race, but I'm not sure that it can, because you've got four very defined GC men with Fuglsang, Yates, Thomas and Nibali. And I think the podium is going to come from, well, they're four of the three who will make up the podium, if not the top four.
Not necessarily.
Not necessarily, fair.
Kruijswijk was leading the race a couple of years ago, crashed into a wall. G hit a motorbike a few years ago.
Head over heels in the snow, didn't he? Yeah.
Would we have expected Richie Port to get on the podium at the Tour?
Probably not.
They got 3 weeks. They finished 3 weeks today. A lot can happen. Yeah. A bit of rain on any one of the stages, crashes. G broke his collarbone at the Tour a few years ago in a corner.
Mm.
Simon Yates, he looked like dead cert to win a couple of years ago and fell off the face of the planet.
Went backwards, lost 25 minutes on the day that Froome won.
Nibali lost a packet in 16, out the race, attacked the next day, won the race. Snow's expected in the mountains. The year I climbed off, I remember they finished at Cime di Lavaredo in the snow. I mean, 3 weeks is a long... It's not a cert that they're going to just sit there and G win the race. I mean, look what happened to Roglic at the Tour. Okay, finished second, got on the podium, but we all thought he was going to win.
Yeah. So the Giro is amazing. How do you feel as a rider? Yeah. Is the pressure slightly less compared to the Tour de France?
No.
You feel the same. So you felt, for example, at the Tour in 2013, having won the Tour in 2012, you felt exactly the same pressure on your shoulders.
Yeah, as the winner of the Tour, it's hard to repeat. I found it hard to repeat the success in a three-week race. G's had a year off, if you like, although he finished second at the Tour, to be fair to him. But he's refreshed, you know, he looks like a different rider now.
I almost feel like that suits him, coming in with the pressure off his shoulders,
because
his form hasn't been good.
They've got 3 weeks to go. He's going to bed tonight.
Well, I say his form hasn't been good. He's second in Tirreno Adriatico.
3 weeks to go. He's going to bed tonight. And tomorrow's the first shake-up of GC. So he's got to be on it tomorrow. And that's day three. So, you know, we sat here at the Tour thinking, right, them tough stages in the last week is what's going to be crucial. So it's game on tomorrow. And the Giro is bloody hard, you know.
I think of it in the same way as the 2012 Tour in terms of the parkour suited you, in that you had three time trials, you were the...
Is this theory that it suited me? I mean, I don't know. Did it?
Because I feel like it did, and watching it then, thinking back on it now, I think that was a race entirely suited to your strengths.
Yeah, you still had to do all the other stages. I mean,
and that's not to diminish that at all, but...
When Le Mans won the race in 89, there was five time trials. In the Indurain era, they used to have a 75k time trial with Lac de Vasier. I'd have loved that, you know.
So you've got 64 kilometres of time trials in this race, which undoubtedly, among the GC contenders, suits G best, with one 34.1 kilometre time trial on stage 14 that will favour him particularly for me. So
I think it's horse.
All right, why?
Because it diminishes riders like G, you know. It suits G because it's like time trials are a charity to people, you know. People don't say that about sprinters, you know, like, you know, resented or only one because it was a time trial. It's like, well, f***ing learn out of time trial then, you stupid. That's bike racing. It's the nature of being able to do all the disciplines. And it's like, it suits G, but let's not forget, G won two mountain stages in the Tour. He won an Alpe d'Huez.
So no doubt he can climb just as well, if not better than anyone else in that race.
G is a complete bike rider. And if none of the others are, it doesn't suit with G. It makes G a better bike rider. It doesn't suit, he only won the Giro because it suits because of three times. Well, boo-hoo. Learn a time frame.
If Thomas isn't going to win the Giro, who is?
We've stated the four. I think Fuglsang. I don't know. I can't see him doing anything at the moment. Could be a surprise.
Could be a surprise. I'd like to see Kruijswijk win it. I feel like it was his to win in 2016 and he got unlucky. And I feel like he's
he
worked.
Nibs lit up the race and he was trying to chase behind.
Yeah, fair. I feel like he got unlucky on a stage in the snow, which must have been unbelievably difficult. Right. And then
Everyone
else got down, but he went over the handlebars in the snow on a descent.
Yeah, well, that's bike racing.
That is bike racing.
If you don't like it, go get a proper job.
Well, we look forward to seeing how he does. And that brings us to the end of this episode of the Bradley Wiggins Show by Eurosport. Thank you to our sponsor, Lacquer Bicycle Insurance. Brad, as ever, we can follow you at...
Sir Wiggo.
Sir Wiggo. I should add that you can follow Eurosport on Twitter at Eurosport_UK. Plus, you can find us on Instagram and Facebook. Thank you to our producer, Pete Burton. Podcast Pete. And finally, from me, Graham Wilgos, it's goodbye. If you've enjoyed the show, please do subscribe, share your thoughts, and rate us on your podcast platform of choice. Brad, we will both be back with a bonus episode for Stage 3 tomorrow.
Bonus.
We're looking forward to it.
Bonus.
Yeah.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.